Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you. Willie Donick will join us momentarily. We are live from Bridgestone Arena, where the Nashville Predators will host the Calgary Flames tonight at 7 o'clock. Pre-game at 6 o'clock right here on 102.5, 106.3. The game, the Predators have dropped 7 consecutive games. It is their longest winless streak in more than 11 years. So the Predators are looking for their first win, Derek, in about a calendar month. I believe their last win, which was against the Winnipeg Jets, which was their most impressive performance of the season. The Jets were the number one team in the league at the time. Actually, it happened closer than I thought. I was thinking it happened on November 14th for some reason. It was November 23rd. So it's only been a couple of weeks since they won a game. Not a full calendar month, but the Nashville Predators will look to get off of their 7-game winless skid coming up tonight at 7 o'clock.
They have not fared well with Canadian teams the last couple of weeks. They lost the Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. They lost the Canadians. Mm-hmm. They lost to the Senators.
Right.
And now up next, the Calgary Flames.
They've already lost to the Flames this season. That was part of that 5-game road trip.
So maybe they shouldn't play Canadian teams anymore.
Unfortunately, in the NHL, you do have to play a Canadian team or two, and we will get into the Predators later in the program. So with the Titans losing to the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday, it was a formality. Mm-hmm. We knew that the Tennessee Titans were not going to make the playoffs. But with the loss to the Jags on Sunday, they were formally eliminated from playoff contention. So players who could hold out hope that, hey, maybe we could string some wins together and get ourselves back into the race, make things interesting down the stretch. No, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. In terms of the standings, in terms of the standings, the games are meaningless. Well, for fans out there that want the Titans to lose so they can move up in the draft order, these games aren't meaningless. But for the players on the field, in terms of trying to move up the standings, it doesn't matter. They're not making the playoffs.
No.
And what's going to be interesting, Derek, over these next 4 weeks, they have four games left in the season, is how they go about their business. Because you were fortunate enough, Derek, that you didn't miss the playoffs too many times in your illustrious NFL career. But we were talking before the show. I was wondering if there was an example of a season where you were in a similar situation, where you knew before the season was over that you weren't going to make the playoffs. Not a situation where if we win this game, the final game of the season, we're in. If we lose, we're out. You knew that you would have two, three, four games where you were going out on the field. You wanted to play well. You were putting plays on tape. You were playing for a contract, perhaps. But other than that, there really wasn't anything to play for in terms of wins and losses. And you pointed to the 2004 Titans, which finished 5-11 under Jeff Fisher. At the end of that season, your team lost five consecutive games down the stretch. I don't know when in that season you were eliminated from postseason contention, but that was the season that came to your mind when you were looking for an example that was similar to these Titans. So if you could go back to that 2004 season, you knew that you were just playing out the string.
Yeah, I mean, we had it's sort of similar to what the Titans are going to going through right now in this respect, the injuries. We were a good team from top to bottom. We had good players. But when you lose your quarterback, your, you know, you lost your running back from the previous year, Eddie George, who they end up cutting, and he ended up going to Dallas. So a part of your leadership is gone. And then these guys that you depend on, they were all dropping like flies. And we held on as long as possible. I think Billy Volek came in and he did a wonderful job, but we just couldn't match team for team. It had gotten so bad that year, and I think this is the year where we end up going. We had so many injuries on our team. Mainly, it was a lot of defensive guys, and we had some key offensive guys out. But we went to Indy one year, that year, I believe it was that year, and we knew there was no way on God's green earth with Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison, all those guys, that we were going to be able to go down to Indianapolis or up to Indianapolis and win a game. We just knew it. Were we going to play hard? Were we going to give it up? Absolutely yes. But we knew man for man, we couldn't go with them. So what did we do? We pulled out every trick play imagined, you know, onside kicks, everything. Because we knew that this was probably the only way that we would be able to sort of get a leg up on the Indianapolis Colts and try to catch them off guard. Well, we did that. And it worked for a minute. It worked. We were up for a minute. And then once all of those fancy trick plays wore off, they end up beating us by like 21 points, somewhere around there. Because ultimately, the best team ends up winning.
If I recall correctly, this was December 5th, 2004. Colts 51, Titans 24. You were up 24-17 at the end of the first quarter. And we're outscored 34-0 over the final three quarters.
But we knew that, listen, the only shot we got at winning this game is to pull out every play from the playbook, the bottom of the playbook. And Heimerdinger did an excellent job at doing that. Fisher did an excellent job at just game planning and trying to, you know, find some ways to get that hidden yards or extra points. Alan Lowry was a part of it because of the special teams. All the stuff that we tried to do at the beginning, it worked for a half. But then once we were all out of those type of plays and it was man on man, we had no shot. Why? Because our roster was depleted of starters, and it was depleted of the guys that were supposed to be the starters to the starters that were hurt. They end up getting hurt, the backups. So we were down at times to our third or fourth on the depth chart, corners, our third or fourth on the depth chart inside, you know, guys on the defensive line. as well as guys on the offensive line. We were just decimated as a team. That's why I said, from the injury standpoint, I can relate to this team. But as far as that, I don't think there was ever any question of the head coach, the GM, the special teams coach. There was no indication that, you know, anyone would be fired. I mean, if you have a bad season, because we had just come off of a AFC championship game where we lost to the then Oakland Raiders. So you come back, you have a bad season, nobody's thinking somebody, everybody's getting fired. But here's sort of the ironic part about that. We knew that this was the end of a dynasty. We knew this was the end. Like, we knew at the end of the season that guys were going to be let go, veteran guys were going to be let go, and they were going to have to start this thing all over again. So, I can't relate to the Titans team this year based upon that. But, I mean, just like any other team, I think whether you're playing in 2025 or back in 2004, when you know you've been eliminated from the playoffs, you have to find that why now. You always got to have a why. And that's what I ask, you know, young players, like, what is your why? Why are you playing this game? Find your why. And your why, listen, your why can't just be money. I know that's a big part of it. But your why just can't be money, you know. What is your why? When you got all the money, when you got the new contract, and your team's doing, what is your why? Why are you still continuing to play? Are you trying to honor a contract? Because if that's the case, I don't want you on my team. What is your why? And that's what the Titans got to figure out in this situation, because they are mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, and we knew that even before they lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Right, but as a player, can speak to this, as a player, in the position that we're in now, we can say they're not making the playoffs. But as long as that little E is not next to your name in the standings, as a player, you are playing like you have hope to make the playoffs.
Yeah, but even when it's there, now, again, what is your why? Now it's, okay, I know we're not in the playoffs, so why are you playing? What's your why? Do you want, I mean, are you going to stick, are you going to hang in there with us? Because if you're not, then you're going to show me and I'm going to make my decision and you will not be on my team next year. I need to know the guys that are going to stick with this, even though it seems very lean right now. Even though we know we ain't making the playoffs, even if every team loses from here on out, we're still not making the playoffs. So why do you still come to practice? Why do you still go out there and play this game that you're getting paid a lot of money to play, whether it's millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars? It's still a lot of money. So the Titans got to figure out their why. The players got to figure it out. The coaches, what they got to understand is that coaches now are really in evaluation mode. Now, because it's not about necessarily winning games moving forward. It's not about that. Do you want to win? Absolutely you want to win. But it's about who's progressing as a player. Who's getting better? Who's still coming in, you know, at 6:30 in the morning before anything gets started? Who's still putting in those extra hours? Who's coming in late? Who's missing meetings? Who's not doing the things that, who's missing training, you know, physical therapy? What guys are missing physical therapy? Because this time of year, when guys are hurt, some guys, if the trainer says you need to be in here at 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, you've been hurt for the last 8 weeks, and you've been coming at 6:30 in the morning because your team is still mathematically still in the playoffs. So you want to be there. You want to try to get healthy. Now that you know your team out, are you still coming in at 6:30? Because now if you're coming in at 7, we got a problem. You know, I want to see the guys that still stick to their regimen, you know, even when we're losing, that are still coming in at 6:30 in the morning, that are still showing up to meeting 5 minutes early. When you start to show up to meetings right at the bell, or you start to show up at meetings 30 seconds late, a special teams meeting, then no. We can't have that.
One thing you've talked about, Derek, throughout the season when the team was losing is you have to be wary of there becoming divisions in the locker room. And after the Titans lost, and I know this full well as a reporter who's been in a lot of losing locker rooms and dressing rooms, in those moments, you don't really have time to collect your thoughts. You don't have time to rehearse a response to a question. You're really speaking off the cuff. And there were some post-game quotes that I think caught some people's attention after the game against the Jaguars. The one I saw that I think made the most waves was Jeffrey Simmons. David, if you will, this was Jeffrey Simmons after the game on Sunday talking about Will Levis and the offensive line.
This sucks, man. Apparently, we're not in a position and we don't do enough to win games. And all the way around, I'm tired of seeing our quarterback on the ground. I'm tired of him seeing him squirreling on the damn ground, actually. Getting his block knocked off by their edge guys. And I don't know, man. Like, it's frustrating to see that. And especially right before the half, you know, we're throwing the ball. Like, we know they're finna rush. It's frustrating, like I said, at the end of the day, I'm tired of saying we got to do better, we got to play better. It just, I don't know. I don't have no answers. So it's complimented football, wasn't it?
So that was Jeffrey Simmons. It was sort of hard to hear, but he said, I'm tired of seeing our quarterback on the ground. I'm tired of seeing him squirreling on the ground. He mentioned the play right before half, the Hail Mary, where Josh Hines Allen blew up Will Levis, re-injuring his shoulder. He was able to come back into the game, but I think all of us can agree that when that play happened, we're like, well, he's done for the day. Mm-hmm. So that was Jeffrey Simmons after the game. Yesterday, Brian Callahan was asked about if he has any concerns about the locker room splintering now that the season is effectively over.
Were you concerned at all about are you concerned at all about any splintering? Because yesterday, maybe it was heat of the moment, but some guys said you have to start playing for yourself. And Jeff was talking about how he's tired of seeing the quarterback, you know, laying on the ground. And other guys were saying, you know, two turnovers and 6 points is just not enough.
Yeah, those things are all, you know, that's accurate. I mean, two turnovers and the way the defense played and only have 6 points certainly is something that I'm just as irritated about as I'm sure they are. And look, when you're out of the playoff contention and you're trying to fight, there is an element that guys do. This is their job. They are paid professionals. Their job is to play football. My job is to coach it. That's a part of it. And it ultimately, like I said earlier, that these next four games are important for us. They're important for what comes next. They're important for the type of foundation and culture we're trying to continue to build. And we're trying to set ourselves up to do things the right way. So when we come back in the next phase of this, that we're in a better place than we were when we started. And that's the idea. Outside of that, that's football. I mean, guys, your film is your resume. They have to play well because some of these guys are looking for new contracts. They're on 1 year contracts. That's all a part of it. So I don't take any issue with that. I don't look at that as splintering at all. I do think one of the strengths of our team is the way that they do stick together and do play for each other and do things the right way in that regard. So all a part of it when you get to this point in the season and you are where we're at. But I got a lot of confidence in those guys and the way that they go about their business and how connected they've been over the course of this season, despite the adversity. So I feel really good about our locker room and where they are. Again, they should be frustrated just as much as I am.
That was Brian Callahan yesterday. Derek, there was a part of that clip that got you chuckling a little bit.
Listen, Jeffrey Simmons, he's going to say what he's going to say. But what he has to understand, listen, man, you're not doing your job either. You played a great game the other day. I'm like, man, that's the Jeffrey Simmons last week.
Against the Texans.
I was like, man, that's the Jeffrey Simmons that got that big contract.
And he followed it up with a stinker against the Commanders.
Exactly. So it's like, man, like, okay, cool.
You were hard on Simmons after the loss to the Commanders.
This is what we're going to see from Simmons all season. I'm like, okay, we got Jeffrey back. And then he comes back out and lay an egg. And then this prior week, he's a no-show again. Listen, control what you can control. That's what I would tell Jeffrey. Control what you can control. You can't control Will Levis getting knocked down. We all know. This is not like something that has just happened. We knew this, you know, 10 games ago. Hell, we knew this at the beginning of the season, what was going to happen with him, you know. Because they didn't upgrade the right side of the offensive line the way we felt they needed to. Now, they went out there and they got guys, but they didn't get guys for true competition to push one another. So Jeffrey has to understand, man, control what you can control. Leave that other stuff to the coaches, okay? Because those same players could have came back. It's like, Jeff, I'm tired of seeing the running back run up the gut on you. I'm tired of seeing, you know, teams that can't run the ball, they run the ball on us. I get tired of seeing y'all not be able to get to the quarterback when we need a play. I'm tired of seeing when we're inside the red zone, y'all can't stop nobody. I'm tired of seeing that. I'm tired of seeing y'all not getting sacks. I'm tired of seeing y'all not getting turnovers. Yeah, y'all have gotten a few the last couple of games, but what was before that? Nothing. So, again, Brian Callahan sits here and says, we got a great locker room. That's not a great locker room, Brian Callahan. I don't know what locker rooms you're used to, but that is not one. I said this last year or year before. When everybody was coming out, the locker room's great. Yes, this and that when Vrabel was there. Yes, this and that. And I'm like, okay, yeah, they may just be right. But anybody can say that when you're winning, when everything's going great. I want to see when y'all start losing games, when injuries start to occur. Is that locker room sticking together? And lo and behold, when that start happening, you start hearing stuff come out of that building, players talking after game, this and that. I understand the locker room. I know what it's like. I know a good locker room, a really good locker room, and I can feel when a locker room isn't good.
So what do you think about this locker room?
This is a locker room that is waiting to point fingers. They are waiting to point fingers in this situation.
Hold that thought. I think that's really interesting, and we will get to that on the other side. 615-737-1025. We'll get your thoughts on the Titans. You can call us, text us on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nashville's best deal this week is 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. 312 Pizza Company serves the best pizza in town, as well as Chicago-style eats like Chicago dogs, Italian beef sandwiches, and more. Check them out at 371 Monroe Street in Germantown or order takeout online at 312pizzaco.com. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals now to get half off a $30 gift card to 312 Pizza Company while supplies last. Tune into the Chase McCabe and Big Joe Show tomorrow from 9 to 11 a.m., I should say, for your chance to qualify to win a pair of tickets in the all-inclusive Eurostone Club at Bridgestone Arena and see Brett Eldridge live on Friday, December 20th. That is a week from this Friday. The Brett Eldridge concert ticket contest is supplied by Green Trees, a family-owned cannabis company. Check them out online at GreenTrees with a Z, company.com. Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, joined by Willie Donick. A programming note, usually we speak to Tim Hasselbeck in the spot, but Tim has a conflict, so Tim will not be joining us today. We hope to have him later in the week. Always love getting Tim's insight. Willie, are you there? You're there. He's not there. He's running.
He's here, but he's not here.
He's physically here. He's not on the air quite yet. He'll let us know.
Yeah, he'll let us know. And David, I do, because Willie was taking care of his predator duties. So I want Willie to hear that clip again in a couple of seconds, in a couple of minutes.
Of Simmons or Callahan?
Of Simmons. Okay. And then we will get Willie's response to that. And then we need to play the Callahan response to what Jeffrey Simmons said as well. Once Willie get himself in his mic.
Yes. Ready. So where we left it was we were discussing a comment from Jeffrey Simmons. There were other comments,
yes,
but this was the one I could find on video, and it wasn't the greatest audio quality. But it was Jeffrey Simmons saying, I'm tired of seeing my quarterback on the ground. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of seeing my quarterback squirreling on the ground. Mentioned the play right before halftime, the Hail Mary, where Will Levis gets annihilated by... There he is. There's Willie.
Hello.
The magic of live radio. He mentioned the play right before half, the Hail Mary attempt, where Josh Hines Allen obliterated Will Levis. We thought he injured his shoulder. He did, but he was able to continue in the game. We then played the clip from Brian Callahan about if he's concerned if there's any potential splintering that could go on in the locker room as a result of the fact that they've been eliminated from the playoffs. And this is where it got juicy. Derek said, this is a locker room just waiting to point fingers at each other. So let's get your thoughts on that, Derek, and then we'll replay those clips for Will.
Yeah, and let me sort of rephrase what I said. There are some in that locker room that is just itchy to point fingers. I'm not saying everybody in that locker room, because it usually is only a few guys that tend to sort of, you know, point fingers or try to blame the other side or try to blame another player. There's always just a few of them, and it's not the whole. But because there's a few and a few talk loud, as we know, sometimes the few get misconstrued as everybody, and that is indeed not the case. But in this situation again, Jeffrey Simmons, worry about your side of the ball. I can't remember, and listen, guys will tell you this. Like, veteran guys will tell you this. Like, listen, guys that are truly in it and it's truly about the team, don't criticize the other side of the ball. You don't do that. We just do our job. Don't criticize them in public or anything else, because their job is just as hard as our job. And if we're 4-11 team or 3 and whatever team, and it's not like we all are doing such a fabulous and fantastic job. If we were, we wouldn't have the record that we're having. So you are breaking cardinal sins here. You're breaking them. It's a cardinal sin to point fingers at the other side of the ball when you're not doing your damn job the way you need to be doing it. So that is the beginning of a locker room being divided. When your supposedly leader, the guy you've deemed as your leader, I'm not saying he's their leader or not. I'm just saying the guy that you deemed as your leader, the guy that ran Carthon, said on the radio waves that Jeffrey's one of our leaders. This is the guy that has been repeatedly saying things that would cause one to believe that your locker room isn't together. The one guy that is supposed to be the guy that is bringing everybody together is basically telling, like, y'all not doing your job, offensive line, and offensive coordinator slash coach, why did you throw the damn ball? Why did you throw it? So you're pointing fingers on that other side, but you're not pointing the fingers at yourself. Because I could have said, well, Jeff, you and the defensive line didn't hold up. Y'all allowed ETN to score the game-winning touchdown. What's up with that? Why y'all couldn't, you know, stand up tall and stop that? They were playing without both of their tackles, the Jacksonville Jaguars. But yet and still, they were able to run the ball in from the 10-yard line for the game-winning touchdown. See, things like that causes a division in your locker room, because those guys on the offensive side, they may not say it out in public, but they're like, man, shut the hell up. Like, you do your job before you start telling us about. I'm telling you, that's how it is.
So let's play the clip so Willie can hear it. David, this is the clip of Jeffrey Simmons. And again, it's a bit hard to hear. We'll clean it up. But this was Jeffrey Simmons after the game on Sunday.
This sucks, man. Apparently, we're not in a position. We don't do enough to win games. And all the way around, I'm tired of seeing our quarterback on the ground. I'm tired of seeing him squirreling on the damn ground, actually. Getting his block knocked off by their edge guys. And I don't know, man. Like, it's frustrating to see that. And especially right before the half, you know, we're throwing the ball. Like, we know they're finna rush. It's frustrating, like I said, at the end of the day. I'm tired of saying we got to do better. We got to play better. I don't know. I don't have no answers. So it's complimented football, wasn't it?
Well, you said you ain't had no answers, but you gave an answer. Like, Jeffrey, stop it, man.
I always like to hear when somebody does that, if you're going to give examples, mm-hmm. like the play before the end of the half, that's mm-hmm. a pretty specific thing that really, at the end of the day, that was not
no.
the difference in the game, other
no.
than unless – there's issues going forward with Levis' shoulder, which I guess we'll have to find out this week at practice. Mm-hmm. But I like to hear a guy come in and say, I got to do more too. You know, if you preface it by saying, and look, I got to do more. I'm not having a great year. None of us are having great years. So it starts with me. I like that. Then the other stuff plays better, where that just seemed like a real frustrated guy venting and not coming across. I'm sure he feels like he's got to play better, but you have to say it, I think. This is, again, media relations, dealing with the media 101. I feel like I could teach a class of how it's going to play.
And you're
it doesn't play well.
You're right,
Willie.
Yeah, you're right, Willie, about that. But you are a veteran player, Jeffrey.
Right.
You know what to say.
Going down the list of offensive struggles,
exactly.
that's not smart as the defensive guy.
Absolutely. And that is all
Unless
I'm
you're saying, hey, and our defense has got to do better.
Yeah.
Like, you have to balance it at least. Mm-hmm. but it was more unbalanced towards it leans, you read between the lines, and it's a little
he
more.
He didn't take accountability for
a touchdown, yeah. We win.
He didn't take accountability for
at least in
his
that
defense.
Clip. At least
yes.
in that clip, he didn't. Yeah. He didn't play everything.
Yeah, exactly. In that clip, he did not take responsibility. Now, there may be other clips where subsequently he decided that he wanted to incorporate himself into the equation. But in that scenario, what his teammates are hearing now is, oh, you're blaming us for this, you know, for the loss last night, the loss Sunday during the day. When, in fact, none of us did good. None of us. Like, don't just point at the offensive line because, frankly, listen, last week's game, that was the least amount of times he got pressure.
Right. And as you pointed out, Jacksonville lost their tackle on the morning of the game. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see them get a lot of hits on Mac Jones. Did they?
Not to my knowledge. It's like
they didn't get a lot of hits.
Listen,
he wasn't harassed back there.
You need to stop. But this is what happens when you perceive your locker room to be one way, but then you start losing and reality kicks in that it's not. And then the way that – listen, Big Joe said this, and I didn't believe it then, and I really don't – it's like it's hard for me to believe now. But Big Joe said something during camp. That the day that Jeffrey Simmons did all that crap and stirred it up, and Brian Callahan did not throw his ass out of practice, you would have sent the message right there. Like, right then and there. Because I tell you what, I tend to believe that Vrabel would have said, you're out of practice. You're gone.
I think that
even
was
as
Vrabel's,
a first-year coach.
I think that was Vrabel's rule.
You fight, you're out.
Because
that's what it would be in the game.
Yes.
You would be out of practice. But Brian Callahan is he wants to tiptoe, walk on eggshells and want to be friends with everybody at the beginning, that you don't set
set the precedent.
That listen, I don't care if you're Jeffrey Simmons or you're the third guy on the depth chart. If you fight in practice, you will be told to go in the locker room because the league don't care who you are when that happens. But when he didn't do that, he set a precedent up. Big Jeff, you can say whatever you want to say because we don't have many players like you. So I got to give you a pass each and every time. And it seems like every time. He makes excuses for Jeffrey Simmons when he says something. I'm not saying Jeffrey Simmons is a bad person or anything else, but Jeff has to understand, just like the head coach has to understand, certain things you just cannot say and certain things you can't allow as a head coach. The minute you allow Jeffrey Simmons to do that in training camp and you didn't kick his ass out of practice, you set a precedent.
Well, one thing we've talked about, Willie, and we mentioned it not too long ago, was that we knew that this team had those vocal leaders, not just in the locker room, but they were good spokesmen for the team through the press, like Derrick Henry, like Kevin Byard, like Ryan Tannehill. Go back further, Jarrell Casey. From afar, I've always had this feeling that Jeffrey Simmons has sort of been put into that position by default because there's been a lot of turnover. He has tenure, and unless I'm missing someone obvious, there really isn't that person. It's not the quarterback right now. That's usually who you look to, right? Mm-hmm. It's not the quarterback. They have veterans in the secondary, but they're new to the team and they're currently injured. So Jeffrey Simmons might be that guy by default, but Derek knows this well. Even if we're questioning Jeffrey Simmons' leadership capabilities, they're not being questioned in the locker room. And there are players in the locker room who will look to Jeffrey Simmons as an example. And you know, I'm sure you've experienced it in your career, Derek, that not everybody's made out to be that leader. And young players are impressionable. Like, they see how Jeffrey Simmons conducts himself. That's how they might conduct themselves later on.
Let's say this, though. It is hard when you're 3-10 to keep going out there and talk and being the guy that has to talk.
Yes.
Roman Josi has been put in that position all too often this year. And
it's not fun.
He hasn't had to do that much. They've been a winning team, not a Stanley Cup winning team, but their teams have won a lot since he's been the captain. Mm-hmm. This is new territory for him, having to go and answer. And he does it. This is, again, where I wonder what is the value of being able to be effective in those situations? Because they're tough, right? Because every time you step in it, and you say something wrong, everybody's going to just jump. See, this is why they're 3-10, you know, or this is why they're way below what their expectation is. So that's not an easy job, but some are more natural at being able to do that. Some grow into it. I would say that Derrick Henry was a little shy when he first came into the league, but as he got more comfortable doing it, he became outstanding, I thought, in those situations. I think we cite a lot of examples of that. It is a little bit of a learned thing, how to deal with yourself in the press.
It's a learned thing, but it's not a hard thing. It is not a hard thing. Now, it may be, you know, irritating at sometimes that you got to keep going out here and talk about a loss. It may be irritating, or it may, you know, you may not want to do it, but it's not a hard thing to do. It's really not. I did it for damn near 15 years. It's not hard to do, because in your mind, I've said this and I will continue to say it. You control the interview, not the person that is interviewing you. You control it. I was told that my second or third year in the league. They said, Derek, listen, you got to understand. And they were talking to everybody, but I'm just saying, you control. Don't make the interviewer make you feel as if they're in control of the interview, because they're not. You take your time. You think about your question. They're not going anywhere. Because they want the soundbite. Yeah. So they're not going anywhere. And if it takes you a couple of minutes to gather your thoughts, then do that. Because they're going to – all of them, all 15 of them are going to sit in front of you and wait. That's just what they're going to do, because that's their job. Jeffrey Simmons needs to learn how to, especially after games, just take a deep breath, sit there, let the question be asked of him instead of him thinking about his answer as the question is being asked. Listen to it, then take your time, and then answer. And I guarantee you, you wouldn't have said what you said about the offensive line. Because basically, you were pointing at the offensive line and said, it's the offensive line fault we lost. That's basically what you're saying.
Sorry, Derek. 615-737-1025. By the way, Mac Jones pressured 10 times on 34 dropbacks, one sack on Sunday. 615-737-1025.
One sack with your tackle waking up sick, where you have a game plan. You're game planning to have that tackle in there. He's gone. To give up one sack... If I'm Jacksonville, I am saying offensive line coach, offensive game plan, great job protecting the quarterback.
615-737-1025. So we've heard from Brian Callahan. We'll play that clip again coming back from break on how he handles, you know, these next four games and tries to ward off any splintering in the locker room. But there was something that was said on the broadcast. I heard Jared talk about it yesterday. Derek, it kind of falls in line with what you're talking about with Brian Callahan and Jeffrey Simmons during training camp that I want to get into, because I do think this is a big part of the next 4 weeks. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game.
Are you concerned at all about any splintering? Because yesterday, maybe it was heat of the moment, but some guys said you have to start playing for yourself, and Jeff was talking about how he's tired of seeing the quarterback, you know, laying on the ground. And other guys were saying, you know, two turnovers and 6 points is just not enough.
Yeah, those things are all, you know, that's accurate. I mean, two turnovers and the way the defense played and only have 6 points certainly is is something that I'm just as irritated about as I'm sure they are. And look, when you're out of the playoff contention and you're trying to fight, there is an element that guys do. This is their job. They are paid professionals. Their job is to play football. My job is to coach it. That's a part of it. And it ultimately, like I said earlier, that these next four games are important for us. They're important for what comes next. They're important for the type of foundation and culture we're trying to continue to build. And we're trying to set ourselves up to do things the right way. So when we come back in the next phase of this, that we're in a better place than we were when we started. And that's the idea. Outside of that, that's football. I mean, guys, your film is your resume. They have to play well, because some of these guys are looking for new contracts. They're on one-year contracts. That's all a part of it. So I don't take any issue with that. I don't look at that as splintering at all. I do think one of the strengths of our team is the way that they do stick together and do play for each other and do things the right way in that regard. So all a part of it when you get to this point in the season and you are where we're at. But I got a lot of confidence in those guys and the way that they go about their business and how connected they've been over the course of this season, despite the adversity. So I feel really good about our locker room and where they are. Again, they should be frustrated just as much as I am.
That was Brian Callahan yesterday addressing whether he's concerned of any potential divisions in the locker room. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Derek, your talk, you went back all the way to training camp. Mm-hmm. We remember that day with Jeffrey Simmons gets thrown out of practice, gets into an argument with a colleague of ours, and it was not a good day for Jeffrey Simmons. But Brian Callahan did not throw Jeffrey Simmons out of practice that day. There was something that was said on the broadcast. It was a passing comment during a break in the action. And I actually heard this during the game. Jared and Ian were good enough to clip it because Jared talked about it yesterday. David, if you will, this was a clip of the broadcast crew talking about maybe a change in the way that Brian Callahan is addressing his team.
And a flag is down.
False start. Offense, number 78. 5-yard penalty, second down.
Common theme for Tennessee, penalties, especially against the offense. That's the fifth false start this year against Petit Frere.
Listen, we talked to Brian Callahan about the penalties that the Titans were going through and how they've struggled. First in the NFL when it comes to penalties. He said his voice changed with the guys this week. He was a little bit more stern with his tone and tried to get them to understand it's their own mistakes that's holding them back from winning football games.
We go back to Callahan and the point Jason was making. Callahan told us he got after the guys this week, and Will Levis told us that the tone definitely changed with Callahan, and Callahan said that his demeanor is pretty consistent, but this week he had to show the team that he does have some bite. He was more intense, used some choice words with his team, and he thought the message was received well. We'll see how it plays out today for Tennessee.
Spoiler, it did not play out well because the Titans lost, but I did think...
How were the penalties? I didn't feel like they had a lot of penalties on Sunday. I didn't go check exactly.
They had a few false start penalties. I don't really... Like, holding penalties, that's a part of the game. It happens. It's the pre and the post.
It certainly wasn't as bad as it was a couple of weeks ago when they had, 11 penalties in the first half?
Well, we went through it. They are among the most penalized teams in the league, either first or second. Last I checked, it changes week to week, and there's different ways to calculate it. When you really get into, like you were saying, D-Mace, the pre-snap penalties versus penalties that result in first downs, penalties that negate big plays, like it seems like they are way on the wrong side of the ledger on that. So I don't blame Callahan for saying, I got to try something different here, because what we're doing is not getting the message across.
But my question to you, Derek, is it too little too late to have a shift in tone? When I heard that, I often relate to being a young parent. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I talk to my son one way and all of a sudden change my tone, that message may not be received. Mm-hmm. So we knew that Brian Callahan would handle things differently than Mike Vrabel. On the outside, they're two completely different personalities.
But diametrically opposed.
Right, to put it lightly. but when I heard that, I was like, why wait until now?
Callahan says, now after 15 weeks, now you get a bite in your
right.
In your voice.
That was their 13th game.
Yeah, don't nobody respect that. They listen to you and be like, whatever. It's going in one ear and out the other. Yeah, coach. All right, whatever. You decided after 15 weeks, 14 weeks to now get a bite. Listen, good to great coaches, when they come in, and I'm only speaking from experience, and I had two great experiences with two great coaches. One is considered the best coach ever to coach a college football game, and the other is considered one of the greatest coaches in the National Football League. Nick Saban and John Harbaugh. When they came in, they say, listen, this is my show now. Things are going to change around here. That old stuff y'all used to do, we're not doing that no more. I'm going to show you that this is my team now. Like, we're going to weed out all of this stuff. We're going to become a team. That's one thing I'm going to make sure happens. There's not going to be one guy over the other. we're all in this together. And if we all go down, we're all going down together. It's not like, oh, you're going down, but you're going to be saved. No, if we all go down, we all going down together. And if we all survive, we're all surviving together. That's how Nick Saban was, and that's how John Harbaugh was. They came into situations like, we're not having that, even with leaders. I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to talk to the leaders and tell them what I expect. But we're not having that. When you do things that I deem as detrimental to the team, you're going to be out, or you're gonna have to sit the bench, or you're getting kicked out of practice. Saban did it. People didn't like it, but he did it. And John Harbaugh did it. People didn't like it. Some of the players didn't like it, but he did it. But then at the end, they respected him for it. They respected him for it, Adam. They respected him for it, Willie. It may have been hard at the beginning, but they expected it from him. You can't come in, you know, walking on eggshells, trying to make friends. I don't want to ruffle anybody's feathers. I'm going to let them sort of do what they want to do. We'll figure it all out. No, you got to come in with a stern voice and set a tempo. Not to say that you are sort of like, it's my way or the highway, but obviously what was done in the past doesn't work.
Okay.
So now I got to make sure I weed all that stuff out, and y'all know that, hey, listen, I am the leader of this team from a head coaching standpoint. Now, what we have leaders within the locker room, but if you do certain things, I am not going to say then, oh, it's okay for you to fight and practice, but that guy can't do it. I'm going to kick him out. Then after a while, people are looking at you like, man, whatever.
Okay, but let me say this, because I agree with everything you said. That's how I was taught to play. I expected that from the coaches I played for. I respected the coaches that did have those policies that you hope lead to discipline, toughness, teamwork, etc., standards that you set, little things. But remember this, what was everybody talking about the day that Brian Callahan took the microphone as the head coach? That, hey, it's a new era. We don't want Mike Vrabel and all the discipline and the hard sort of that. You don't coach like that anymore. And I did say that day. I was like, I don't know, man. You got to have a balance. You can be the player's coach. You can be, you know, there was a line of questioning, right? And I think the organization was selling it, that we're going in a different direction from Vrabel. And I think we all understood that that was a tough call, and Vrabel, maybe it was time was up, it was time to make a change, and you go in a different direction most of the time when you make a change. But there is something to be said for the old school, within reason, right? Not abusing players, and not, you know, not like Bobby Knight and stuff like that, but there is a standard that has to be set. So this is a rookie head coach who is young, who I think is learning that, yeah, be communicative, be the modern new age coach. But at the same time, you have to have discipline, attention to detail, and there's got to be ramifications for it.
615-737-1025. We will continue the conversation about Brian Callahan. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton on with the podcast.